You're listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and I'm with my very old friend, though he is younger than me, Dominic Barrett, who Hello. I have known for 10 years at this point, if not longer.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not aging well, Dominic, as you can tell.
Well, it's been a decade.
It has been a decade. I actually saw you on my birthday, thanks to the marvels of Facebook, mm-hmm. An application that I consistently bash.
Right. Well, finally some good podcast. Came of it.
Finally, know? Hopefully, yes. Anyways, I ran into you. And you used to DJ at benefit shows and rock and roll shows that I would have on, that I would put on in the suburbs. What did you think of those? I mean, I had you DJ between bands. I think you, I don't know if you DJed the Fall Out Boy show, but like there were some bands that actually sold a lot of records later on.
Yeah, well, I
but
did.
But none of them were electronic based.
No. I did the first.
You did the first one.
I did the first, and I think I did some of the second.
I think the second one was with the. The second or the third, I think the second or the third was the one...
that had some gems on it.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them gems, but I said they made money.
Fiscal gems,
yeah. In this economy, they are the kind of bands you want to have on your label.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in terms of ears, they're not the bands you want on your headphones.
Right. And then, remember, Greg had the electronic counterpart.
Yeah, so you were DJing me for a long time.
Yeah.
In a weird way. And you continued to do that throughout college.
Yes.
Why? What draws you to electronic music?
It's just fun.
Okay, but so water slides are fun.
Right.
But you're not.
And
I
love water slides.
Okay, fine. That's a bad example. But why electronic music and not the blues or the jazz or whatever?
Right. Right.
Why computers?
I think ever since I was very young, I mean, I've always liked Nintendo and computers, and mm-hmm. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, I always remember just being, you know, fascinated with that kind of thing.
Okay.
You know? And people always say that men have more of a natural fascination with machines, you know, like
okay,
and sometimes that's like cars, you know, but
of course,
it's fucking computers.
Okay, so but what about computers? I mean, you have the fascination. You obviously like Nintendo and video games mm-hmm. as a young child, but. Why were you drawn to that and not board games? Why were you drawn to that and not building a treehouse?
Right, right. Well, I mean, something about the bright flashes.
The bright lights.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, I just got so drawn into video games. And it's weird because, like, especially when I was younger, I was bad. I was bad.
At video games?
Yeah, I was real bad. In fact...
What games are we talking about here?
I mean... Thinking like NES, you know what I mean? I got a Nintendo when I was in first grade.
Okay.
You know? So I'm like six-ish.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And some of those
games
were...
So this is like, what, 88, 89, 90?
Yeah, 89, 90.
Okay.
You know? So it had been out
for a while.
So
like Mario 2.
Right, yeah, shit like that, you know?
Okay.
But like a lot of those games were punishing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like... You're trying to like make it through Mega Man 2, and it's just like kicking your ass, you know.
Okay.
And like I'm throwing tantrums, and I was like a pretty even tempered kid.
Yeah.
And my mom considered like, you know, goddamn, like this thing is making him freak
out.
So
wouldn't she get that away from you? And
she almost did, but
how did it go from you freaking out to enjoying it and pursuing a career in something like it?
Well, just sticking with it and kind of. You know, like, you just keep playing video games,
yeah.
And you get better, and I just got more into it and into it, and then that just kind of became, like, ingrained in my culture, you know what
okay.
I mean? Like, my friends, like, it was always, like, you know, are you a Sega kid or are you a Nintendo kid?
And which
know?
One were you?
I was a Nintendo kid.
So you went from Nintendo to Super Nintendo?
Yes.
To N64?
Yes.
To what?
Then I went GameCube.
Then you went, really?
Yeah.
You were like one of the eight people that went GameCube?
Right, yeah. So I have a strong
To be
lineage.
Fair, I really shouldn't be talking shit about anybody, because I had a Sega with two games, and then before that I had Nintendo, and all I played was Blades of Steel and
sure.
Tetris.
Sure,
but not
Blades
a video game
Steel,
guy. Blades of Steel is awesome,
good, yeah.
Because it mirrored life, because you could beat the shit out of somebody in real life, too.
Right, right.
And you could hit a puck.
And that's, Maybe that's why I like video games. It teaches yourself. You teach yourself something about life, you know?
I like how you made wisdom out of bullshit.
Right, yeah, so do I.
So you went to we went to the same high school. That's how we met.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, you were interested in electronic music.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about the video games. We never talked about video games before, so I learned something about you in the first 4 minutes. What about electronic music? Why do you like to listen to electronic music, specifically IDM? Because I saw that you make IDM occasionally.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, please explain IDM.
IDM is intelligent dance music is the phrase. Mm-hmm. So people like Aphex Twin, Autechre, Square Pusher, and, you know, billions more. The thing about IDM as a label for music is that it's...
It seems to be the catch-all for whatever doesn't follow into jungle or drum and bass or house or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And
like, there's more... Tell me if I'm wrong here. It seems that there's more leverage on the BPM, the beats per minute, on IDM versus anything else.
Yeah, I mean, IDM is electronic music that usually is complex.
Okay.
Is my best description of it. Because, you know, like, there's some Square Pusher stuff that really is... I mean, it could be called drum and bass, but it's very intricate, you know. But then his next song won't be.
But a lot of the IDM I've heard is very sparse.
Sure,
it's intricate, but it's really sparse. Where a lot of the drum and bass I've heard, the majority of it is very straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
For those that don't know, how would you describe drum and bass? Because isn't there a BPM like protocol for jungle and drum and bass and house?
Yeah.
Like, could you run through that really quick?
Yeah. Well, so I spun drum and bass for a real long time, mostly throughout college, and beats per minute for drum and bass would be anywhere as low as 160 to anywhere as fast as 185. 190 would really be pushing it.
Once you get to 190, what are you doing then?
Then it might count as breakcore.
Okay.
Which is kind of Venetian snares, if you're familiar with Venetian snares. Breakcore turns into that genre where you're doing crazy shit to do crazy shit. Like, it's very scatterbrained and actually has a lot in common with the IDM community, I guess you could say.
Does it sound like a hardcore drummer playing a snare?
Breakcore?
Yeah.
No. It can, okay. But not always.
Okay. What's before the 180? Is it 180, would you say, for drum and bass to start?
The lower shelf would be 160.
Okay, what's below 160 then?
Well, all right. So now you're talking about, you know, different genres and, like, the speed that they're going at. So, like, one half of that is the speed, of course, but the other half is the beat structure.
Okay.
So drum and bass, the beat will loop every... It's on eighths.
Okay.
So the drum pattern will be written in eighths, but then, like, house is fourths.
Okay.
So that usually is, like, dun, dun, dun.
So it's easier to dance to.
Yeah, something housey would be easier to dance to, but you could have house that was 140 BPM, which would be more like house, but then you could have that same beat that's at 180, which might be called happy hardcore or hardcore. So just because something's the same BPM doesn't mean it's the same genre.
These are like loose protocol that might give you an idea.
Right, exactly. So okay. So like, for example, like hardcore, you can be going hardcore techno, that is. Like hardcore electronic. You know Mindless Self-Indulgence?
I do.
So a lot of what they do is like digital hardcore, like Alex Empire kind of stuff. So that could be going 180, but it's not drum and bass.
What about like Atari Teenage Riot?
That is digital hardcore.
Okay, so
that's Alec Empire.
I like that guy.
Yeah, Alec Empire, he's crazy, man.
Is that the guy with the tattoo on his face, or is that guy dead? Somebody in that group is dead.
The black guy's dead.
Come on.
Yeah.
Did he have the tattoo on his face, or the other guy did? How'd he die?
He killed himself.
How?
I think he hung himself.
Ah, boring.
Yeah,
Are you sure
boring.
It was suicide, or are you sure it wasn't just autoerotic
asphyxiation?
Yeah.
I'm
a la in excess.
Right.
So
I think he killed himself.
You think it was a suicide? All right, so
I just don't know how.
Well, I'm going to assume a belt go from there. So you like to make electronic music as well as just DJing it.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff do you like to make?
Well, I mean, in terms of what I've been making and DJing, I've kind of shifted, like, in terms of specific genres now, mm-hmm. you know, like, just DJing house or drum and bass or breaks or any of that stuff, like, that's more a relic of, like, the rave days.
So, like, the late 90s that you really didn't live through. Because you're not old.
Exactly. Like,
oh, you're 24, 25.
I'm 24.
Yeah, you didn't live through the heyday. Like, when you saw no. Go, you were in high school or junior high.
I
and that was at the end of it.
Right. I heard about it as it was dying.
Yeah.
And I completely missed the train.
So you wanted to be on that train, or you just spin that stuff now because it's fun?
Well, I mean, like, that's all I knew then, you know what I mean?
Well, and yeah, so let's give some people some background. You grew up in the western suburb of Oak Park, famous for Frank Lloyd Wright and Hemingway yeah. and stuff like that. So you were very, very close to Chicago, literally next door.
Yeah.
But you weren't part of that scene, because it's kind of like Evanston or Hyde Park, where there's these little, like, pockets. In Oak Park, obviously, where you can stay segregated from most of what everything's going on in the city. So while there were giant raves going on in Chicago, in city limits, you and I knew really nothing about this.
Right.
Because we were sheltered in a weird way.
Yeah.
So, sorry. That's why you didn't... You were there, you just weren't at the party.
I mean, I wouldn't say that I was there. Like, yeah. in high school, I was learning, you know?
We all were learning.
And I kind of appreciate that, you know what I mean? Like, I really put in the work to read about it and know my music, and then in college I did the rave thing a lot, but that was New England, and this was like way out. This was on the way out, you know what I mean?
So
there was some
where in New England was this?
This was Hartford.
Hartford, okay. So when you say raves in Hartford, what describe a rave in Hartford?
Well, the main venue at that time, so my college career is 02 to 06.
Okay.
That time, if you say Hartford Raves, there's a club called The Municipal.
Okay. Is it still up?
No.
Oh.
Actually, my friend Angie just texted me a few weeks ago saying it had gotten torn down, and just recently it was made into a credit union.
Oh.
It's a credit union. So it's that kind of
yeah. So it's small, it sounds like.
It was small, but they had a big basement, and I mean this
nice.
place, this
That's
place
cool.
was grimy, and
yeah,
so it was a club technically.
Yeah,
so there was a basement, and then the upstairs, I'm doing flying quotes
there
for internet people, was a restaurant that the club owner / main DJ would run during the day.
As a cover or be?
No. It was the Municipal Cafe, and then at night everyone would go to the Muni.
All ages? Sounds like it.
Yeah,
would be.
Yeah. It was.
Did they
all
say
ages.
Alcohol or anything?
They sold alcohol where the restaurant was, and so you had to like get into. You had to get a wristband to get into the bar area, but then, you know, it was all ages, or it was 18 plus.
So that's good for you, because like once you got there, you could go right away.
Right, and that's exactly why I wound up spending a lot of time there.
Yeah.
You know, and then...
Did you ever DJ there?
Yeah.
How was it?
It was, you know, it was fun. Like, there's a lot of people... I mean, this place was so grimy.
Yeah.
You know? And there's a lot of raver trash. Like, there are some sad, fucked up people, you know?
Due to drugs or due to what?
Yeah. I mean, mostly due to drugs. But even just like, you know, sometimes it's
Tell me about it.
Just like trashy white people, just
white trash.
Yeah. But
so
I mean,
like
really,
in New England.
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Hartford is fucking bad.
Why?
It is.
What Hartford, happened to Hartford?
There
was it a blue collar town and a factory closed. Was
I mean,
it
circa the 50s? It was.
So
it was a factory.
I had
town.
No idea.
Yeah. So
I'm learning. All I know is there's a hockey team there.
Yeah, and not even anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah. When they moved, they I think they moved while you were there. Or was it before you got
right
it?
Before.
Yeah.
The stadium got fucked up.
What happened?
I think, like, I may just be pulling
I like
this
that
out
people
of my
listening
ass.
That might know. They're like, they're getting it fucking
right,
wrong in
yeah,
every way.
Yeah.
So let's keep talking about
right,
this.
Right, let's just aggravate them more. Yeah. I think something weird happened to the stadium where, I don't know, did it was it structurally unsound or something broke or something like that. Wow. Like it was, and also no one watches hockey. So
yeah, in Chicago that's just changing now, and we have one of the original teams. So yeah. Anyways, back to the white trash in Hartford in college. You went there for computers in a way. What is your actual degree in?
Interactive information technology.
To a layman, that means
computer science without all the math.
To a layman, that means what is computer? When I hear computer science, that could mean anything. That could mean a programmer. That could mean a web designer. That could mean a guy that literally is putting information to a spreadsheet.
Right.
Yeah. So, what did you do?
Well, what I did was I studied programming mainly in Flash.
Okay.
And I did print design. Like the major had sub majors, so there were people who did network administration or there was a journalism.
That's cool.
Yeah, there were like six. Exactly. It was cool.
You have options. And you have tangible options.
Exactly. And it's just because, you know, like computer science strictly actually isn't really a lot of web design. Like computer science as a major across the board is pretty hardcore, like you're programming, you know, real shit. It's very mathematically.
So you obviously learned something in the major.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once you got out of college, you've recently quit a job by choice, obviously. Like quit that out. So the past 2 years, you've been in the corporate type field, the office field.
Yeah.
And you used your degree or no?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah. I mean, especially like since graduating college, I definitely used my degree because when I first got out, I worked at Allstate as...
You don't want to say, if you want to say anything bad or if it gets bad.
Oh, no, okay, no, it's fine.
Everyone's
it's fine.
Good?
Yeah, yeah. It good. Was, in fact, I got the job through a friend.
That's
it was
good.
One of those, like, chance opportunities. And I did print design.
Okay.
Which I didn't think I was going to use because, like, I wasn't a design major, so I'm, like, kind of weak. But it was, you know, it was good. So I used that. And then when I left there, I wound up doing more regular web programming stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like I really used everything I learned. So I don't know. I'm not one of those people who feels like they picked a useless major.
I don't think you did, my friend. I pointed out that you quit your job by choice.
Yes.
About a month and a half, 2 months ago now. Because you were moving to Portland.
That's
correct.
You're
leaving the Windy City to go to Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, one of the people I used to DJ with in college, we wanted to set up something where we could work together after college, and he was kind of moving around, and there were complications trying to set up exactly how it was going to work, so he settled down in Portland, so I figured I put in a year in my job, I want to work on music, so why not, like, you know, change a venue, so.
So you're moving across the country, well, kind of halfway across the country, to work on music.
Yeah.
With a friend. Why couldn't you do that here?
I could. I could have done that here.
Well.
But, he's a real good friend of mine, but he's also really knowledgeable. There are people who are talented musicians, and there are people who, you know the technical stuff, but he has a good mind for all that, and he's recorded with bands, you know. And
what kind of stuff does he do?
He does things similar to me, but lately he's been getting more into recording live bands.
What kind of stuff? Like
he
rock and roll, soul, funk, metal, what?
Rock and roll. He likes the noise, you know.
So like a band like No Age or something like that.
Not familiar.
Don't worry about it.
Thunderbolt.
Okay.
Maybe. He really likes, he was showing me Liars.
Yeah.
He's been, like, really digging that.
Okay.
Also, we really like dubstep.
Okay.
So, he's been getting into doom metal.
Yes.
Because there's kind of a link there.
From dubstep. Please continue on this.
Well, we were talking about it. So, I went out to visit him, and we went to this record store.
This is in Portland,
okay. Yeah. And we were talking to this other guy who spins dubstep out there, and Sully was saying he went to this doom show, and this guy was like, oh, yeah, that guy's really awesome. And then we're all like, that's kind of weird, you know, to go from something very, like, I don't know, dancey to...
Metal.
Right,
metal,
doom metal.
Yeah.
But it's all about, like, it's about noise and bass lines, you know? And it's very, it's plodding, and it's heavy, you know what I mean? It's, like, uranium heavy. It's, like, dense, you know? And, like, even though it doesn't sound the same per se, like, those same qualities of just, like, bassiness and kind of claustrophobia kind of, you know, they're there.
Okay.
They're, like, distant cousins, maybe.
So so dubstep and doom metal are in the same family. They're, like, in-laws at this point, though.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, and I don't know. He may be mad at me for, you know, spilling his thesis out there.
No, but it's interesting. I've never heard of that before, so I will look into that.
Sure,
thus far, everything we've talked about relates to technology in one way or the other.
Yeah.
Let's say you were born in 1950. What do you think you'd be doing in 1975?
What would I be doing in 1975?
What would you be doing without computers?
I mean, that's like, it is such an alien world to me. But yeah. I think, you know, if I was going to, like, follow my passion, like, you know, not just, like, get a desk job and, you know, replicate, I would probably do something acting-wise.
Really?
Yeah, or writing.
Do you do any of that right now?
No, I did improv when I was in college, and I had a lot of fun with that. I had a lot of good people to work around with, and
I liked how you did improv in Hartford, but not Chicago.
Yeah.
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 You really went to the center of the action right there.
Right, exactly.
Well, do you do any writing or acting right now?
No.
Why not?
I mean, it's just one of those things where if you got to spend your time on one thing.
Dude, you're not working.
That's true. That's true.
Write a play in like a day. You can do it.
You think I should do that?
I do. Why would I say it? I'm not a liar.
Okay. All right.
I don't even like the band Liars, actually. Right. They're not my cup of tea.
Okay. Then, yeah. Then I'll do it.
All right, cool. Yeah, that was easy.
I'll send it in.
I'm a good life coach.
Right.
So you're moving to Portland to start the music thing, but what's the ultimate goal for you to move? I mean, your friend, Sully is his name, correct?
Yeah.
Why doesn't Sully just move here? Why do you want to go there?
Well, I personally, I think it's good to make a big change in order to motivate myself to really work on this as my main focus. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a hobby anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I'm going to do in my spare time. It's something that I want to be the main focus of my life, you know, and kind of
as in music itself, but like,
yeah,
how are you in this as a producer?
Yeah, producer.
That's what you want to be. You want to be a producer.
Yeah.
Who do you want to produce? Or do you want to make your own stuff?
So that's another thing.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
We can talk about
in electronic music, and in hip hop usually.
A lot, yeah.
When they say producer, when they being everyone, when everyone says producer, they're the people that actually make the music itself.
Right.
Okay, so who's a producer everyone knows?
Timbaland.
When you hear Timbaland produce this, he made all the beats.
He made the beats.
Except when Timbaland produced the Hives record, he sat behind a board. That's the difference between rock and roll and electronic music and hip-hop, etc.
Right, exactly.
So you want to make beats... You want to make music with your name on it. You don't want to necessarily work for other musicians.
Yeah, but I mean, I always love collaborating.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I would like to try something out like that, you know? But yeah, I mean, there's stuff that I want to do that I, first and foremost, I want to get out there, you know? And then if people want to collaborate, and who knows, like maybe I might want to work with a band or something like that. Maybe I suck, maybe I don't, you know, but it's kind of like making music an integral part of my life.
When you make stuff though, you're usually like, do you use the studio at all? Is anything organic in the song?
Currently?
Yeah, currently.
No.
When you go to Portland, you hope that will change.
Yeah. Yeah.
How will that change?
Well, you know, you could make an electronic album top to bottom in one application on a laptop if you wanted to, you know. But I feel that my friend being more into, you know, bands right now, he's also more of like a gear nerd, you know, so he appreciates the live aspect kind of thing. And that, that changes your workflow, you know. Not saying that, you know, one thing is better than the other, mm-hmm. but, you know, when you're playing the drums as opposed to just sequencing the drums, mm-hmm. maybe you'll come up with different drum parts, you know, because you're approaching it in a different way. So I think just in terms of originality, you know, I want to tap into that live thing.
When you go home, what do you listen to?
Lately, mm-hmm. lately I've been listening to a lot of Flying Lotus.
Who's that?
He's on Warp. He's a hip hop producer. His album is Los Angeles.
Good.
Really good.
Lost or Loss?
Loss. Los Angeles. Okay. Yeah. And it's kind of like Mad Lib ish.
Okay.
If you're familiar. And I've been getting down on that kind of thing lately. Like, it's funky, but it's chill, you know.
So, like, you like the Stones Throw Label, you like, who else I'm thinking of? Def Jonx, stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even when I was spinning electronic music constantly, I was still listening to Def Jux and
Do you hope to produce Ryan any Sayers. Hip-hop artists?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I started DJing, like, I got into scratching first, you know, like, you remember that.
I do remember that, actually, which is ironic because no one does. No one scratches anymore.
Exactly. It's like,
not even when you were learning, which is like 10 years ago, more than that, no one was scratching.
I mean, there was a
except like the dude from Limp Bizkit. DJ Lethal was it.
Right, right. I mean, there was a thing, like, there was a big turntablist subculture at that time.
Really?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. Okay. Well, Mixmaster Mike, you know? Like, think Mixmaster Mike.
Yeah, but he got into the tail end of that in, like, 98.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying it was a big thing.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, DJ competitions and battles were still a big deal, you know?
Yeah.
So, the Invisible Scratch Pickles, if you've ever heard of them, like, that was Mixmaster Mike's turntablist crew.
Oh, okay.
And, like, you know, 98, 99, they were the fucking bomb, you know what I mean?
And now, 10 years later, they need a job.
And that's what it's like, you know? It's like, that kind of music, it didn't jump the shark. It's just kind of...
No one cared enough for it to jump the shark.
And that's what it was. Like, it just kept on doing what it was doing, and it faded away. And a lot of those people, like DJ Craze and A-Track, they all moved on to production.
Yeah.
They all moved on to... you know, doing straight mixes.
Well, you'll make more money, too.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, it's also in that spirit, you know what I mean? Like,
making money spirit, or?
No, the making music spirit,
yeah.
You know. But maybe making money.
There you go.
But, I mean, A-Track, he's had a Fool's Gold. Have you ever heard of that lately?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He started out, he's...
He's Kanye's DJ, he's dating kid's sister, yeah.
Yeah, he's 1 year older than you.
Yeah,
He started out straight up, like... scratching.
I know.
You know, so like he was born of that scene, and he's probably like...
He was born in like the suburbs, man.
Well, no, yeah, he was. But I mean, that was the fun thing about turntablism is you could be a nerd.
It was,
you know,
actually,
I mean?
Probably better to be a nerd, actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. Because, I don't know, they're just like...
You need the practice in there. It's a lot harder than people think.
And it's
to do what you do, it's very difficult.
It's technical. Like, it appeals to nerds in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I mean, even fucking Timbaland and Dr. Dre, like...
Oh, those guys were, yeah, total nerds.
They're all nerds.
Yeah.
They're all nerds, yeah. You know? You don't play around with computers all day
and
not become a nerd.
As I look into the computer screen.
Exactly.
All right, I'm going to close this thing with a question from the Kids Book of Questions by Gregory Stack, PhD. Dominic, I need you to pick between 1 and 260.
75.
Did you ever stand up for something you thought was right, even though a lot of people got upset with you? If not, do you think you would ever be strong enough to do so?
The funny answer would be no and no, and then you just quit cut out.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Right, yeah, that's the easy one. Yeah, sure I have. Why
what did
you
stand
not?
Up for? You're going to seem great.
I voted for Barack Obama.
Come on, man. You're in Chicago. And you're probably looking at a Barack Obama sticker on my guitar as you speak.
Yeah. I mean...
So, no. Right. No, what did you do?
I don't know. I always try to, like, do the right thing. I don't know.
That was so boring. No, I want an example.
Let's see.
Think of his childhood. What did you do in like grade school where you stood up for the underdog?
Where I stood up. I specifically remember in grade school trying to be more inclusive of people who were like exiled.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And try not to bully those people. You know what I mean?
You're such a fucking PC answer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, well, then no, I guess. I guess I've never really stood up for anything. Because you know what? It's not because I'm an asshole. It's just because, like, I'm probably just a little bit lazier than most people.
I disagree.
And someone else will stand up before I get the motivation to stand up. Maybe that's how it plays out. Like, I do it. It's just that usually someone else does it before I
shut up.
Get to it.
Whatever. That's such a cop-out answer. Dominic, good luck in Portland.
Thanks, man.
You need to send me some tracks so we can play them on the outro. But today, we will end with Daniel Knox, who is playing December 20th. At the Empty Bottle, you've been listening to you, me, them, everybody. I never know how to end the show. You notice that?
I did notice that.
The intro fucking nails it every time. This is what it is. This is who I am. The end, here's 10 more minutes of banter that I don't know what to say.
Well, who is this guy that you're playing,
Daniel Knox,
by the way?
He is a Chicago singer-songwriter, piano player. He's wonderful. As you and I speak, he's currently in London.
Okay.
He's playing with Jarvis Cocker of Pulp and Patrick Wolf and all these other dudes.
Okay.
And he's playing a few dates out there. And then he comes back. He just writes... He's my third favorite living songwriter.
Okay.
Behind E from the Eels and Nick Cave.
All right. So, I'll have to look into it.
He's wonderful.
I think it strikes a good tone for your show.
I do. The only problem is he's... I can't, like... I don't want to throw in, like, the jokey stuff.
Okay.
But I don't want every song, every show to be, like, super serious.
Hmm.
So the hardest part sometimes is picking out the song, which is a great hardest part. It's a very easy hardest part to have. So
true.
Good luck in Portland, man.
And good luck with the song.
I need it.
Sometimes we